we had conversations that went for up to 38 minutes just with a bot talking about a property. And the extension of that is, of course, the leads that came from that converted at a rate that was 8 to 10 times higher than a normal portal inquiry.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for Real Estate Industry, sales professionals, property managers and leaders. We bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts, visit EliteAgentElevate.com. Now, here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate Podcast, where we delve into some of the most interesting minds in business and in real estate for the very best tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of this week's show. This week, my guest is John Minns, Managing Director of Independent in Canberra, who is one of the industry's most experienced leaders. And today we're going to be talking about transformation and we're going to be doing some leadership diaries. So welcome to the podcast, John Minns.
Thank you, Sam. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's awesome to see you in Sydney. So you were at Macquarie's Leadership Day yesterday. So tell us a bit about that.
Macquarie put on a particularly good day yesterday. It was a very full day from a 4:30 start in Canberra to 10 o'clock last night. By the time we landed home, but they did a really fantastic job of getting together not only a great bunch of speakers, but continuing a narrative through the whole day, covering things like digital transformation, client experience, leadership, all the things that are going to be very important for our industry in the coming years.
And Canberra is a really interesting place to be in real estate right now and has been very busy. So what have you seen for the last year in your local area?
Canberra's obviously a market we're very, very fond of. And Canberra's been through an interesting period of time, like much of the rest of the industry. The fluctuations, particularly in property supply and volume of sales, has been both a challenge and an opportunity. So the first half of last year was certainly well down on volumes. But the other thing that has happened, I think, across the country, and Canberra was certainly not immune, was the level of uncertainty around politics, around federal elections, around housing policy, negative gearing policy, all of those sort of things just had consumers saying, what's next? So the great thing in Canberra is that I think we hit 2020. People had said, 2019, really glad that you were here, but really glad to see you gone. And we got to the point where this year, I think our inquiry rates have doubled. The turnover in both the residential market and the projects market has probably increased by a significant 30%+. It's been a pretty positive start to the year.
We always see positivity coming out of Canberra, but it's interesting what you say about, last year being the year of two halves almost. That's what we're calling it now. When there is like a possibility of a change in government in Canberra, what generally happens? Is it sort of like everyone kind of just stops and waits to see whether they're moving out or moving in or...
Yeah, the interesting thing, and we always look at Canberra and say, what's the heart of politics? And when you live in Canberra, you don't feel that way. You tend to feel it's a pretty cool place to live. It's always been a very good, solid real estate market that doesn't necessarily follow the same market cycles as somewhere like Sydney. So that throws it out of kilter a little bit. So typically when there's an election around in Canberra, we know it's coming, then people forget about it until the few weeks of the campaign, and then we start worrying about it for a while and then head off from there. But I think last year was coupled with the fact that the economy wasn't quite sure where it was going. Wages growth has stayed stubbornly low right across the economy. People were just lacking in confidence, weren't sure where things were headed. And when you get all these mixed messages around things like housing policy, affordability, opportunity, they probably played into a narrative that was only partly to do with politics. A lot of it was just to do with how people were feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the other interesting thing that's been going on in Canberra for the last 12 months, I guess, is a new player in the portal space, which is Zango. So having lived through that and they've now launched, so tell us a bit about Zango and how that's impacted Canberra.
I think housing Zango will impact Canberra is going to be interesting over the next 12 months or so. It's obviously a challenge launching a new portal in any market. I think for those of us who've paid attention to what's happened around the world in the world of Zillow or Rightmove or realestate.com, in Australia we've seen some really significant dominance of a couple of big portals. And in Canberra, All Homes, which is owned by Domain, is actually the preferred destination for the vast majority of consumers at the moment. So Zango is a new model. It's not the first and no doubt won't be the last who are saying, well, at the moment you can jump on for free, and what we really want to try and do is to capture as many consumer eyeballs, both buyers and sellers, as possible. And we wish them well, but I think it's going to be a long journey, and it's going to have some rocky roads on the way to success if, in fact, they achieve it.
Yeah, building a publishing business and an audience is not an easy task. I can talk about that for hours.
No. And look, I think it's had a mixed response from the industry. They're doing a pretty good job with marketing their brand at the moment, spending a fair bit, as you would expect, in the first few months to do it. But I think from a lot of the agents' viewpoint, they're saying, well, just because something's free for now doesn't make it good value. What they're interested in is, you know, is this going to have a positive impact on the clients that I'm dealing with and the, you know, buyers who actually want to be able to find their next property? And that's the thing that at this stage is an unanswered question.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a wait and see.
For me, it's a wait and see, yes.
Yeah. So you're the Managing Director of Independent, which is one of the largest businesses in Canberra, actually probably one of the largest businesses in Australia. I am keen to know how you started in real estate. Did you choose real estate or did real estate choose you?
Yeah, we probably shouldn't talk about how many years I've been in the industry, but before I came into real estate, and I was in my early 20s at the time, I'd essentially made a decision that if I was going to go into business and be successful, didn't have a lot of science behind this, I was going to need to learn how to sell. So I thought, what am I interested in? Probably not insurance as much, but I like property and I've got an interest in property, and this is somewhere I want to go. So I looked around and, yeah, there was a business called Reg Daily Real Estate in those days, and Reg Daily is one of the businesses that's become part of Independent as we know it today. And yeah, they had a big number one was their logo, so I thought, well, that seems like a good place to start.
Yep.
Essentially, I thought I will come into real estate, do 4 or 5 years, yeah, learn to sell, and then decide what I'm going to do from there, which for someone who gets mentally bored pretty quickly, Sam, 5 years actually sounded like a long time even to me at that stage. So to be here some 30-odd years later, yeah, is kind of a surprise. But the industry has changed so rapidly. Every few years it's been something different. It's changing faster than it ever has before. And yeah, just that level of energy and opportunity around it, you know, hasn't changed. So it's kept me here.
It is definitely exciting times coming up for the real estate industry, I think. What's been your main area of focus at Independent over the past couple of years?
Well, yeah, the trite answer would simply to say to deal with the change that the industry is going through, but I don't think that's a particularly good answer because, well, we saw it coming. I guess the one thing that we didn't realise was what the impact was going to be on us. It's very easy to say change is coming, it's going to make a massive difference and we need to be prepared for it. But when it hits you in the face and, you know, the economy is lacking certainty, we've got, you know, low interest rates, which not necessarily a good thing because, of course, that means that people are still concerned about, you know, the direction of all of that. And then we start to get a whole bunch of investment around the world in things like prop tech, who are not quite sure what the message is but are absolutely convinced there's an opportunity there to, you know, either disrupt or disintermediate or partner with the industry. We know things are going to change quickly. So I guess what we've gone back to is first principles on a whole bunch of stuff that we know that we simply cannot afford to ever forget how important the consumer is in this. If you don't have a consumer model that makes sense and you're not adding more value than you cost, then in simple terms, you're not going to be the successful business that you need to be. And yeah, there's times I think we've lost our way a little bit on that because there's been so much going on. At the same time, you need to have a good culture, you need to have a great employee experience, and you need to be providing the opportunity for, you know, the agents to get what they need, because otherwise your client experience is never going to get to the levels it must. So that's been the focus for the last couple of years.
Yeah, interesting times again with margins being squeezed and you've got a very big business that you're running there. How do you balance the need to provide employees with more, you know, in terms of, you just alluded to, you know, more in terms of training and marketing and things like that, with a cost base that, you know, needs to decrease to match what's going on out there?
Great question. And I think it's very easy to relax a little bit when things are going well. And I think there's a Michael McQueen, yeah, used to, yeah, talk about the coming age of irrelevance that, yeah, many businesses tend to be rushing towards. And one of the precursors to that, of course, is things are going really well. You're really profitable. There's good volumes, good sales, you know, happy people, and you don't recognize fast enough the need to move and the need to change. So a significant part for us recently has been to accept the fact that if we've got too complicated, we need to simplify. And a lot of that was simply saying, first place we need to look is in the mirror. What's the leadership of the organisation look like? Are we all adding genuine value? Are we adding more value than we cost? So if we've got to get that level of the organisation right and then ensure that everybody involved is on the journey because they feel like they're contributing and feel like they're adding value, that's really critical. So yes, we've had to look at making sure we've got efficiencies in the right place, that our overheads are very clearly looked at to make sure that we get the right, getting the right results and that we're not getting fat and lazy in any parts of the business. That is critical because in order for us to be able to engage and empower the front line of our business, we've got to make sure we can reward them the right way. We've got to make sure we provide them with the marketing and communication resources they need. We've got to give them the opportunity to be able to grow personally and professionally. So part of that's in training, part of it's in opportunity. And I think one of the really big issues that the whole industry is grappling with and has to be dealt with is we need to be driving a really strong lead generation part of the business, because that is critical to attract, you know, both businesses and agents in the future.
Yeah. So what are some of the ways that you guys are attracting leads, well, both in sales and in property management, because I know both sides of the business, and development too for independents. So what are some of the ways that you do that?
Yeah, give you an example of something that we've just launched. You and I spoke about it a little bit earlier on. We've just launched a new marketing automation initiative, which is something we've been working on for the last 6 months or so now. Marketing automation always just simply sounds like is a good way of spamming people in a professional efficient way, and clearly that wasn't what we needed to do. But this was built around the fact that we sell quite a number of properties through project marketing in any given year. That could be 800, 1200 properties. And of course, a lot of those projects are sold off the plan, and a lot of them then have a lead time of 2 or 3 years from the time that somebody pays a deposit to the time that they actually move in or take possession of the property. So you've actually got to look after people through that period. And we've known this for a while. So again, to go back to the simplicity thing, we said, right, what is the end objective here? And our end objective was to make sure that anyone who purchases in one of these projects is the happiest they could possibly be at the first AGM when they turn up after they've settled on their property. And that then forces us to go back and say, okay, well, when you bought 3 years ago, what did that actually mean? Yes, there's an agent involved, and salespeople are pretty good at building and maintaining relationships, but to say on their own, they're going to stay in touch with someone, give them all the information they need, give them the updates, help them with the adjacent space requirements they've got in buying a property, is probably asking too much of the agent. So we've launched this program, which is, for want of a better expression, a buy management program. We need a better name for it, I think. but what it's designed to do is to essentially take over from the agent, make the agent look better than they've ever looked before by providing value at every stage of the process, but to stay in touch, to let them know where the building's up to. If they haven't made colour selections, we've got a self-serve mechanism built into it that will help prompt them to do that, to make sure that they have them done on time. Let them know each stage of the project and also the things they need to think about on the way, such as, if I'm going to rent it out, what do I need to know about property management? If I'm moving into a strata complex, what's that actually going to mean for me? What's it going to cost? If I need finance, who's the best broker to talk to, and how do we make sure we get what we need? So it's something that does automate a lot of that process, and at the same time, it keeps bringing the people back into it. The agents will get a prompt saying, here's something you need to talk to them about. This communication's going out in 2 days. Why don't you give them a call and help them on the journey, ask them the right question, and make sure that we stay in their lives for a valuable reason, not just spamming them with stuff that they don't need.
It's great if it's an automated thing that can give the agents an excuse to call, because then they can say, hey, did you get our email the other day? Any confusion over the colours? Do you understand everything that's going on there? Wow, the building's looking good. They're good conversations to be having, good news conversations.
Very much so. What was interesting, we've actually had this in our business for 10 years. And when we first built it, it was best of its kind. It changed the client experience around. In fact, we reckon we turned it around about 180 degrees for a lot of people by giving them this information. But we probably took our eye off the ball, or really didn't improve it dramatically for a significant period of time. And one of the wake-up calls we had was a developer who took some of their marketing and sales back in-house. liked so much what we'd done for them that they decided to build their own version of it, and they did it better than what we had. So we had to sit back and say, you know what, that's fair enough. No point in getting upset about it. We now just need to make sure that we move past that again in level of quality of communication and value add. And you launch one of these things, and 90% of it went very well, which we're pretty excited about, had a very good response. We didn't get it all right. There was, you know, some people who didn't get exactly the right information that they needed in that first week. But what's interesting, and we're only, you know, a week and a half into this process now, that the other thing that happened was we had, I think, 16 or 18 buyers come to us and say, can you sign us up for property management? And we knew those people. We should have already known that. And yet this process just helped them on the journey. It gave them enough value to say, you know what, we're ready to go. Can you help us out? So it's been a learning exercise as well as an initiative we're pretty excited about.
Yeah. And the lead that comes to you is a lot easier to close than the one that you've got to go chase.
Absolutely.
As well. Mm. So that's really good. So we've just been talking about marketing automation, which is sort of, you know, like a subset of that prop tech, MarTech, mm. There's so many techs these days. What have you got your eyes on in the prop tech space that you think will be useful? Because I know, like, you know, like there's some people now that shout squirrel every time someone talks technology, you know, because it's a shiny object, you know, like that they need to chase after. But as someone who's built business on technology and experience in transformation, what are you watching?
Yeah, well, look, I think the first thing that we're completely aware of is that businesses are going to have to be effective in the digital space or they're not going to be in business. But I think the conversation in our industry has not been the right one for a little while on one particular front, in that, you know, the most common question that I think, you know, gets asked is, what CRM are you using?
Yep.
And the problem with that question is that might have been the right question, you know, 5 or 8 years ago, but it's not the right question now, because CRM is just simply a small part of it. And part of the belief around CRM for some people is that if I put this little bit of technical gear in, that all of a sudden it's, you know, I'm going to have listings pouring through the door. And I've had the question, you know, from a guy from a technology business we're partnering with the other day, who's also got a real estate background. And he said, well, tell me about some of your high performers. And I said, all right, well, here's the guy who I reckon has got the best CRM in our business. He's a guy who's sold in excess of 100 properties every year for the last 3 or 4 years, never misses an opportunity in relation to someone who's not quite ready to sell now but will be ready to sell later on. He sells, yeah, properties in project marketing, gives people what they want when they need it. I said, great, what does he use? I said, wouldn't have a clue. Yeah, it probably involves the odd spreadsheet, you know, a few post-it notes and, you know, a variety of other things. But at the end of the day, what he's actually doing is managing a relationship in the way it needs to be managed, and he's doing it person to person. So fundamental is, can we use the tool? Is the tool going to enable performance? And if we can provide the frontline something that makes them better than they were before, gives them more opportunity to be profitable, saves them time, then we're actually adding significant value to the agent. So I think your question is, yes, there has to be a foundational CRM component of this, but the big thing for us is, how do we understand our clients better? You know, how do we have a single view of client across multiple verticals? You know, so we've got strata management, we've got property management, we've got project marketing, we've got residential sales. And the amazing thing to me is that, you know, no one has ever built anything that enables you to do that effectively that's industry focused. So big part for us is, how do we use data technology? You know, we've got a data lake that is sitting in the back end to help us drive this. So how can we understand across all of those verticals who we're dealing with when we're dealing with them? And in that case, you know, things like business intelligence, the insights that we can surface on someone's database, or we will be able to surface over the next couple of months, because we understand who they are, we understand what they're doing, and probably more importantly, we understand what they need now. And if we can go to an agent and say, of the people you've got, here's your top 10 that you should be calling at the moment, yeah, that becomes pretty exciting. So data analytics is important to us. Artificial intelligence is obviously going to become ubiquitous in our lives. It already has in many areas. Yeah. So AI, yeah, we're currently running on a lot of project stuff. So Sam the bot communicates to a lot of people, yeah, 24 hours a day on project marketing. But the thing that excites us at the next stage is to be able to have that same technology, so that any portal inquiry that comes in, we can, you know, respond to 24/7. It can get handed to the agent when the agent is needed. And, you know, a big part of that is overcoming the other endemic problem in our industry. The portals tell us 40% of inquiries aren't responded to at all. So we want to do a lot better on that front as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think that the trouble is, and I saw some statistic, it goes back to that nurturing thing. Like, we're used to getting a lead from the portals or getting a lead in from someone, and then if you respond immediately to that person and then they don't get back to you with, I want to list now, then we kind of go, well, yeah, say goodbye, tire kicker. I'm not interested. But in actual fact, what consumers are doing, and there have been studies that have shown this, is that they might jump in at 10 o'clock at night and send off a couple of inquiries without being ready to move, and then they might think about it for a bit longer and then jump back in. And then, so while they're not a good lead at that particular moment, they might be in the future.
Absolutely. And I heard someone say yesterday, the Macquarie conference, you know, we're real estate agents. We're only interested in people who sell houses. We don't need to worry about buyers. And I thought that attitude had disappeared from our industry, and I'm sorry that it hasn't.
Me too.
That surprised me that there was still some level of thinking around that. But, yeah, busy agents will tend to triage, you know, who they need to talk to for obvious reasons. They're focused on performance. They're focused on what's going to make a real difference right now, and that's what makes them great agents. So what we want to be able to do is to provide them, again, you know, a supporting tool that enables them to do their job better. And give you an interesting example. I mentioned Sam the Bot on our projects site the other day. So
good name.
Yeah, Sam seems very happy doing what Sam is doing.
Yep.
But what we discovered when we launched that, and it was literally a proof of concept on a project that we're marketing in Canberra, was that when the AI went out there, people had the option how they wanted to contact us. They could email us direct, or they could talk to Sam for a while. So we found a couple of things here. 40% of the inquiries that were coming in were between 8 o'clock at night and 5 o'clock in the morning. Now, I actually don't want agents, and neither do they, to be on 24 hours a day responding to email inquiries, because they don't get responded to well, and it's actually important for all of us that we freshen up and we're ready to go. So with that level of inquiry, which is presumably when consumers are getting home, they've finally got time, the kids have gone to bed, we can actually have a talk about what we're going to do next. So with that level of inquiry, they just found it easy to be able to get the information they wanted. So when they could sit down and ask Sam a few questions before they decided whether they wanted to talk to an agent or not, there were some funny things that happened. First of those was they were happy to talk to Sam for a lot longer than they'd be prepared to talk to a real person. So the exciting thing about that was they got to ask a whole bunch of questions. The transcript is fully available to everyone who comes into the process after that. And we had conversations that went for up to 38 minutes just with a bot talking about a property. And the extension of that is, of course, the leads that came from that converted at a rate that was 8 to 10 times higher than a normal portal inquiry. So that was a really important lesson for us. A, we were dealing with 100% of everyone and we weren't ignoring them. But secondly, they got engaged, they got involved, and the end result was three of the most expensive units in the project were largely sold by the time they said, can you send me an agent to tie this up? We know what unit we want. Now just tell us what we have to do next.
Yeah, that's really amazing. What about prop tech and property management? Because property management is an area that things are really changing rapidly in. And we had a talk to Hannah, who's your head of property management. And we love Hannah because we work with her on Street MBA and all that sort of stuff as well. Where are your thoughts on prop tech and property management?
A lot of my thoughts have been guided by Hannah. Yeah, she really does have a great sense of the industry. And there's some really great people across our country doing some clever things in space at the moment. Our thinking, again, comes back to the whole consumer need. You know, what makes things easy, what reduces friction, and what works. Yeah, so there's a couple of things that we know are starting to make a significant difference in our business. Yeah, one is the capacity up front to be able to apply sign-on glass, have an app that allows people to pay their rent, to contact us, to do all of the things that are necessary to run the property. They've got an e-wallet that allows them to pay whatever bills they want from that process on. So as a tenant, we can make life easier and we can have it in the palm of their hand on a daily basis. And, of course, we haven't developed that technology, but, we've been actively using Sorted, within our property management division for a while, and it has been a game changer for a lot of our front-end property managers as well as for a number of the tenants. So we're starting to work through that. As far as property management goes, connecting all the bits becomes important, and this, again, no end-to-end platform. As we've talked about, people are yeah, designing some really clever stuff in narrow parts of the transaction, but of course they want to charge a significant premium every time they solve a problem. So we're being selective about what we'd include. Yeah, the other obviously real friction point is maintenance. So if I have a hot water service blow up at 10 o'clock at night, I kind of don't want to be sitting around 24 hours later wondering whether someone's actually got my message and whether they're doing anything about it. So the importance of maintenance, the importance of visibility, ultimately I think the importance, what will happen is things like the voice user interface, Alexa and Google, will be opportunities where we simply want people to be able to say, hey, hot water service has broken down, what do I need to do about it? And to be served in real time with, here's the options, here's who you could contact now, here's what we're going to be able to do. And by the way, if someone is booked in to come and see the property, that you'll be able to see where they're up to, see when they're going to be there, and understand where the transaction's at the whole way. So like many, we've got our toe in the water on that, and we've tried a couple of things. There's some good products that deal with part of the problem. At the moment, technology will catch up, but over the next couple of years, it's going to be really important that our people and the disparate bits of technology continue to work well together while we smooth the process out.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, a couple of things I really picked up in that answer there is that you guys really care about your tenants, making sure that, I'm not sure my property manager cared that much when our dishwasher blew up on Christmas Eve.
Ouch.
Yeah, I know, right? And we're doing lunch the next day. But, that's really interesting that it's heading that way, because I don't think a lot of people in the industry don't think this way anymore. There are probably still some that are, but, the tenant is an investor somewhere else, and I know that's the case for us. But you need to look at the customer as one person rather than as a tenant or a buyer or a seller or a...
Look, I'm not attempting to be an evangelist with a perfect system here, because, we know that we're not looking after all of our consumers as well as we could. We do have instances, either, very busy property managers or, people who get distracted, and the day-to-day management of property is actually hard work. And sometimes as human beings, we think we're dealing with the task that needs to be done or the box that needs to be ticked rather than, what's really going on here, which is, a pain point that someone is feeling and they just want help with. So we haven't got that right yet. What we do recognise is that there is a big opportunity to empower our frontline people a lot more, that we want to be able to remove some of the more mundane, repetitive tasks that can be automated, whether that's through offshoring or technology. We're doing some of that. But that then allows us to say, as we need to, I think, right across the industry, that there's now performance standards and expectations that are built around client experience, and you need to meet those, and that's your number one KPI. So we don't always get it right. We certainly get the principle that, we need to look after our tenants, our buyers, our sellers and our lessors better than we ever have before. By no means perfect at the moment, but we do want to keep on getting better at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the main thing. Like, you don't have to be perfect so long as you learn something along the way.
Yep, very true.
So we'd love to learn a bit more about you and leadership by asking you the Leadership Diaries questions. How was that segue?
Yeah, you managed to slot that in very easily.
And I think you've heard a few of these, but I know I didn't send them to you beforehand, so we're just going to rip into them, okay?
Why not?
All right. So what was your first job and what did it teach you?
My first job was a milk run. In the days when we had milk trucks that used to deliver bottles of milk to people's doorsteps. And the main thing it taught me is don't try and jump off the truck when it's going too fast, because you'll fall over and break a whole lot of glass and it'll land on top of you on a road.
And did that happen?
It did.
Ouch. That's a big lesson.
But, great way to stay fit as someone who was playing a lot of sport and going to school and all those sort of things. So, yes, it was a good learning exercise. I'm not sure that I took a whole lot more than that, other than how to avoid dogs that get cranky when you run past their gate.
I think that's still important as a real estate agent. I learned that one the other day. What does the first hour of your day look like? How does it go after that? Are you like a 5 a.m. clubber or...?
I'm typically up somewhere between 4:30 and 5:30 in the morning. But that's primarily because if I don't actually get out and go for a run or do some exercise at that stage, I probably won't get back to it effectively later on and I don't feel good about it. So typically I will not look anywhere near an email or anything like that until I've gone and done that, freshened up and got my brain where it needs to be. And it's just a good way to feel good about the rest of the day.
Yeah, I think so too. I think, I try not to look at my email first thing either, because I end up reacting to other people's stuff rather than getting clear on what I need to.
Yeah, if something is really urgent, people can still call me on the phone.
Yeah, funny that, isn't it? Can you name someone that has had a big impact on you as a leader?
A number of people who've inspired me over the years, but I guess to perhaps go back to, you know, where I got the first start and opportunity in real estate, you know, the guy who set up our business, effectively the foundations of what we've got at the moment, was a man by the name of Richard Tyndale, who now owns one of Australia's best private zoos in Canberra, the National Zoo and Aquarium. And yeah, Richard was someone who saw things that other people didn't. So interesting, and I heard your interview with Jason Gessing recently from EXP, and that was fascinating. And one of the things that he said was, you know, an important thing we did was we opened up the opportunity for ownership to people. Yeah, Richard actually came up with that concept back in the late 70s. And you know, the fact that we've now got 40-odd shareholders within the organisation who all feel that sense of ownership and partnership has been a really big part of our success. So certainly, you know, his way of thinking, his ability to recognise opportunities and then resolutely, you know, go out after converting them and making a difference was important. But he also taught me a fair bit about me and what it took. I, as a young agent who'd sort of moved into a leadership position, who obviously was, you know, unbreakable and thought I knew everything about everything, I went and complained to him one day, having problems, managing up. There's this guy that you've, you know, put in there that I'm dealing with every day, love him dearly, but I'm just not getting what I need out of it. What are you going to do about it? And he didn't even bother trying to answer that question. He just simply said to me, well, what are you doing about it?
Yeah.
I thought, yep, I probably should have had that answer before I came and asked the question. And it was just that reminder as a leader just how important, you know, it is to take responsibility, whether you think it's your fault or not.
Yeah, accountability right there. That's a good one. Where do great ideas in your business come from?
They can come from so many different places. And one of the things we've had to be very careful with over the years is not to assume that font of all wisdom of people who are, you know, separated from the front line, because usually the best ideas come from people who actually recognise a problem. We talked about some of the difficulties in property management early on, but yeah, but also in sales, what will actually make a difference right now to a consumer. So we'd like to think everywhere. We've certainly always, you know, tried to make sure that there's an open dialogue around it. Doesn't always work, and I think we could do better at providing that situation. The other thing we did, we've got an advisory board, you know, within the business that has some very clever people who are not in the real estate industry on it, who, you know, much as we can, you know, get that whole dominant thinking process going on, we know all there is to know about it, who every now and then we'll just turn around and say, well, yeah, hang on for a minute, but what about this? Does what you're saying really make sense anymore? And are you consumer-focused, or are you simply, you know, focused on trying to protect a legacy position or something that's always worked? And I think you get much better ideas by being able to have those conversations in a very frank way, but hopefully in a very safe environment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's great that you get outside, frontline and outside. That's probably the best combination of all of it, isn't it?
Critical, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. What is your favourite question to ask someone in a job interview? And what does the answer tell you about the person?
I think the person is so incredibly important. And in any part of business, you can't solve someone's problem until you actually understand what it is and why it's important to them. So for me, trying to get that understanding of what is important to an individual through any part of the recruitment process is really the only direction to determine whether there is a path forward together. I heard something years ago that, you know, suggested that in the stages of recruitment, your first job was to sell the organisation to somebody, and you need to get that right. And I think a lot of us think that's the easy bit, and we think we're wonderful and there's every reason you should come and work here. You can't sell anything to anyone unless you understand why that might be important to them. So asking the right question, because what you need if you're going to recruit them is for them to come back and sell that back to you, because that's going to determine whether there's a professional path forward. So, yeah, it's got to start with understanding, and it's got to start with understanding the answer to the question why.
Yeah, absolutely. Just on that topic, this is not a question everyone gets, but I know that you talk a lot about employee experience. How do you figure out what a good employee experience is? Because it must be different for all the different sorts of people that you recruit.
Yeah, look, I think that's very true. And yeah, there's a number of things that we've done recently, particularly in the technology space, that has actually worked against us in terms of employee experience, because obviously onboarding technology can introduce more friction sometimes than it solves. We will get through that process. Yeah, we know what the end game is. We know what we're trying to achieve. But But there's times that we can actually make life harder for people, and I'm super conscious of that. And what that means is that you've therefore got to have a significant investment in relationship. You've got to have people who are prepared to back the culture. One thing I've always liked about the independent organisation is that while we can sit there and fight like cats and dogs over things that different people think are more important than somebody else or some of the direction we're going in, is that we've got such a strong core group of people that if someone else came in and said, you know what, we're going to attack you about this, that the vast majority of people would all band together and say, well, you're going to have to take on all of us. So that's a significant part of it, but we can't ever take that for granted. And I think the stuff that we have to do has got to be to try and get out of the way of what people need to do, but also provide the tools and resources that they need to be effective. And we've touched on some of those earlier, but people need the right training, the right professional development, the right ability to grow within an organisation and to grow as a person, otherwise they're not staying. They need marketing and communications, resources and equipment to be able to go and do their job effectively without having to think too hard about it. And they need access to adjacent space services and things that makes it different. I talk about the yin-yang of client experience and employee experience. We've heard over many years that if you've got happy employees, they will deliver a great experience to the consumers. And I actually think the world has moved past that being true anymore. It's certainly true at a base level, but you have to design an employee experience, you have to design a client experience, and then you have to marry those two things together and find the synergies between them, because that's ultimately the only way as an industry and as businesses we're going to be successful in the next 2 or 3 years as consumers continue to expect more from us.
Yeah, so the idea being make sure you have the employee's journey mapped out.
Yep, absolutely.
And then make sure that the experiences on both sides come together to facilitate a good experience all round.
Yes, I think that's absolutely critical. We haven't got very many value propositions in the industry, but the ones that we've got are absolutely fundamental to what's critical to people. And I think this is where the concept of you can replace an agent with a robot has come unstuck many times. Our value is our capacity to genuinely add value to a relationship and to a consumer in a moment of need and a moment of stress. And when we can do that effectively, there is no algorithm that's going to do that. There's no portal that's going to be able to provide that experience. That is a person-to-person thing. That's someone who can actually give you a hug when you need it, tell you the facts of life if you need to hear them, but to work together to make sure they achieve the outcome that they need. And unless you've got those journeys mapped out together, we're never going to be able to do that effectively 90% of the time.
Yeah. And let's face it, if you've got stressed and unhappy employees, they ain't going to want to hug anyone.
No. And they're not very huggable either.
No, stay away. What advice would you give someone going into a leadership position for the first time?
I think very often we believe if we're good at something, we can then lead other people to do it. And that's probably half true, because leadership is not actually about strategic plans and visions and pathways to execution and performance. It's about what people believe. It's about relationships. It's about the understanding that we need to be able to achieve something utilising, collaborating and synergising other people. So in order to do that, you've got to have some slightly different skills from just simply being able to build a relationship with a consumer. So people coming into leadership, be prepared to say, this is going to be hard. Be prepared to say there really is a big opportunity to make a difference here, but also recognise that in any era, true leadership in our industry, and in fact most industries, is not as frequently found as we might like to think. So I think there's a huge opportunity for people who genuinely want to take on leadership, but there's a couple of things that you're going to need to do. Resilience is incredibly important. And I've heard it said, and I don't agree with it, that the millennials have less resilience than people in past generations. I don't think that's true at all, but I'm not sure that they've got more. I think, there's a certain supply, human nature being what it is, that says resilience is something that can be learned and has to be experienced, but there's a price to pay to get it. And our reality in our world at the moment is we actually need to be more resilient than ever. There's so many things coming at us from so many different channels that we need to get it right. So you need to be prepared to take ownership of things that are important. That beautiful little orange book that appears often in the top of aircraft or airports bookstores by Mark Manson, the subtle art of not giving something else. Yeah, a couple of things I really got out of that book is, yeah, don't give us stuff, you know, about things that aren't important. But you know what? If something is really important, even if it's not your direct responsibility or even if it's not your fault, if you're a leader, you have to take responsibility for it. You have to own it and you have to say somehow or other, we're going to solve it. I am responsible, rather than, you know, looking for someone else to blame. And it's that trait, I think, in leadership that provides integrity, it provides consistency, and it provides a pathway that people will be prepared to follow.
Mm. It's always that, what could I have done better, rather than, you know, what we were talking about earlier, which is your old boss who sort of said, well, what are you going to do?
Yep, that's right. And yeah, there's no point in saying, who can I blame? If it's important to me, I need to own it.
Yeah, absolutely. You just mentioned Mark Manson's book, The Subtle Art Of, which we'll leave a link for in the show notes, a PG link anyway. Are there any other books or resources that you would recommend for aspiring leaders?
Yeah, look, I tend to be a voracious reader, and this answer will probably vary depending on the day, but yeah, there's a few that have had an impact. I read last year a book called The Chimp Paradox by Stephen Peters is his name. We'll perhaps check that for that for the link. But for people who are, you know, fans of Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman, you know, which is a great book, but goes into a lot of detail about stuff. This is sort of the idiot's guide, but it worked for me because I've concentration span perhaps not as big as it could be, but just said, instead of thinking about the whole brain and explaining how it works, I'm just going to break it down into your chimp, your human, and your computer and how they interact with each other. And it's just a beautiful book for a reminder in those moments of stress. How are you responding to challenges? Are you reacting in the right way? Have you really thought it through? But how do you use the instinct and the emotion that is so important to being successful and relate to people in a channeled way rather than simply lashing out, which is what the chimp is likely to do if it stays uncontrolled? So it's actually a really good book, a really easy read, and I really enjoyed it.
I reckon I might get a hold of that one, actually, because I've seen a lot of resources lately on the things that we tell ourselves as well.
Mm.
So it sort of sounds like a good resource there.
It was actually recommended to me by a rugby coach, and he got a whole lot out of it, and he was dealing with the whole gamut of, you know, top flight rugby in the UK is fairly serious, but he's still dealing with a bunch of testosterone-fueled young men, in his case, and understanding how that worked and understanding how to respond to the various challenges they threw up at him. You know, he said this was pretty important.
Yeah, we're all made out of the same materials. Mm. So, yeah, absolutely. Well, John, I would like to thank you for coming in today and chatting about all of this stuff. This is really, it's really interesting, particularly to do with technology and the future of real estate and how humans are going to interact in the future and all of that sort of thing. And, of course, your leadership advice, which I'm going to go and grab a couple of those books now. If there's one thing that you would like everyone to remember as a result of listening to this, what would it be?
I think it's probably stating the obvious, but never, ever forget the importance of people in the property industry. That is what the industry is about, and it's our capacity, not just with our people, but our consumers we deal with, to make sure our total focus is on them. Everything else is just tools.
Absolutely. John Minns, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been great.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Elevate from Elite Agent. To download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts, visit eliteagentelevate.com.